Designed by Wingnut Social is brought to you by Wingnut Social, the leading interior design and home pro digital marketing agency. We know it works, so you don't have to. Learn more at wingnutsocial.com.
Have you hit a wall when it comes to growing your design business? Then welcome to Designed by Wingnut Social, helping home professionals accelerate their success with proven industry practices and expert advice.
Hey kids, and welcome to Designed by Wingnut Social. I'm your host, Darla Powell, and on today's show, we are talking about niching into hospitality design, commercial design, but with a twist, right? It's not that sterile, one-size-fits-all kind of situation. This is boutique, very curated, but still safe, still ADA compliant, and all of those things that commercial designers have to deal with in their space. And our guest, Amanda Jacobs of Amanda Jacobs Design, does it incredibly well. She's been doing hospitality design for 5 years, and we discuss COVID, what that looked like for her business, and I think you're going to be surprised with her answer. It wasn't what I was expecting at all. The future of hospitality design, what it takes to get into it, what it takes to deal with it, and how to separate your commercial spaces from the run-of-the-mill, the trendy, and to really get that exposure on timeless and, well, at the lack of a better word, curated design. But before we get into my conversation with Amanda Jacobs, I want to remind you that we have our wait list for search engine optimization has been destroyed. I burned it. We are now open for search engine optimization clients as well as PPC clients, which would be Google Ads, social media ads, that kind of thing. So you all know that organic social media is imperative for our business, but that can be a little bit of a trek, right? It takes some time to build it organically to where it pays off. It's quite a front-loaded investment before you really start getting that traction and get results. You can't beat it. It's terrific. And the clients that have been with us 3 and 4 years can attest to that as well. But sometimes you want cash flow quicker, right? That's great. We know we're building that, but where are the clients now? And that is where PPC, Google Ads, paid social can really help you bridge that gap. So here we are. Here we are. And that is what we do as well. And that wait list is over. Wingnutsocial.com. Head on over to that website there and click the little let's chat button so we can talk about it and so we can see how we can help. And search engine optimization as well. Another necessary, I want to say evil, but it's not evil. I love SEO actually. That takes some time to grow your business, but that's something that you can do on the back burner, you know, that slow boil while you're doing the PPC ads to bridge that gap and the social media. It's all synergy and we do it all. Wingnutsocial.com again. All right. Before I get into my conversation with Amanda Jacobs of Amanda Jacobs Design, you know the drill. Amanda Jacobs Design, with over a decade in freelance interior and event design, specializes in transforming spaces with a focus on, you guessed it, hospitality. Based in Louisville, Kentucky, AJD crafts inviting environments that blend aesthetics with warmth and thoughtfulness, inspired by clients' personalities and cultural influences. Amanda Jacobs Design creates harmonious spaces that exude luxury and sophistication through a meticulous and collaborative approach. What a nice bio, Amanda. And I want to remind you that if you're not subscribed to our YouTube channel, If you too are not subscribed to our YouTube channel, Designed by Wingnut Social, head on over there and you're going to see some of Amanda's lovely design work on that channel there because it's video, right? And hey, interior designers like to see pretty things. Although sometimes listening can be fun too. And here you are. All right, guys, let's get into my conversation with Amanda Jacobs. Hey there, Amanda Jacobs. Welcome to the show. How the hell are you?
Hi, I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
I'm thrilled to have you on the show. And as we were talking in the green room, I was telling you a full confession. I am obsessed with your work. My goodness, is it stunning. I have over here your website and some design imagery and your Instagram. Holy cow. Oh, how beautiful. And of course, your success being in Architectural Digest and all of the press that you've gotten for your work naturally. Right?
Thank you so much. No, like I said, that means a lot. So thank you.
No, you know, because I had an interior design firm in Miami, so I have like a design is very near and dear to my heart. So I always love to see beautiful work such as yours. But you have a niche.
Yes.
Which is what?
My niche really is in boutique hospitality. That's kind of the term I've coined for it because, yes, there's so much hospitality in terms of design and lots of different variances in that. But I would say the boutique hospitality niche is where we fit in. And that's because it's these really unique individual, you know, entrepreneurs or business owners who are wanting to create this really interesting home for their customers, whatever that happens to be, if it's a bar or a restaurant or a cafe or a bakery.
So this might be a pretty basic question, but for the uninitiated, what is the difference between hospitality design and boutique hospitality design? What really dials it in to make it boutique?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think that in hospitality design in general, there can be a very clean commercial look. You'll see that a lot, you know, in big hotels and mm-hmm. larger restaurants, and those designs sometimes are very replicable. I think in kind of what we do, it's a little more unique in terms of like we can put more of a residential feel to it. And it's not something that you're going to see twice necessarily. Mm. And I do think a lot of our clients are asking for things that if we're doing multiple locations, they still want each one to have an individual feel. So I think the idea is that it feels a little bit less commercial, but still a commercial space.
So is it fair to say that it's more curated and less and scalable? And you know what I mean? It's not plug and play, right?
Yes, so, correct.
Yeah. Okay. So you did mention if you have a client that has multiple spaces, they still want that curated feel. I'm just going to dig in with a heavy hitting question right now. How do you scale that?
Ooh, it's always a challenge. And as many times as I've done it, I really do like to think differently about each one. But a lot of it has to do with the location. And I think that's the easiest answer is like, if this one's in Nashville and this one's in Louisville and this one is all the way out in Denver, they're going to have some sort of different feel, yet you still want it to be familiar. So if it's a brand that everybody knows and loves, we still want them to walk in and be like, oh, I recognize this, but there's something different about it because it feels more local. So I think that's an easy answer, you know, to keep them individual that way still.
So what would that underlying commonality be for a specific design? Like if you want them to have the same feel, I'm assuming there's some branding and color kind of choices that would go into that, but is there an architectural consistency as well?
You know, not usually, no. Okay. I think that's because if it is a chain, then sometimes it could be a shopping center and other times it can be an old building. Mm. Sometimes it could be a place that was a gas station and now it's been retrofitted to be a restaurant. So I think
fun.
Not necessarily the architecture, but definitely color scheme can be one nice consistent thing that you see throughout. Obviously branding, like you mentioned. And a lot of times it could be feel, you know, if this is, they want it a really like cool sneaker, pop vibe, then you can translate that to each of those locations to where it feels the same.
I love it. I was just curious. I was going to pick your brain. So what I'd like to do, Amanda, is backtrack a little bit. How long have you been doing this first?
I've owned my own business for 5 years now.
How long have you been specializing in hospitality design?
I would say around that 4 or 5 year mark, basically as soon as the business began, it kind of shifted that direction fairly quickly.
Okay, so here's my big question, COVID, right? So when COVID, we had the shutdown, hospitality was really suffering. I know we were marketing to hospitality and it was crickets for anyone looking for marketing in that time. How did that affect this niche for you and how has it bounced back?
It's actually been very interesting because it was commercial design and construction. Mm-hmm. A lot of that didn't slow down the way that other construction did.
Really?
And so we had a large project kind of before COVID that just, you know, other than this initial shutdown for that period of, you know, 2 weeks to a month, everything kind of picked back up. So we were kept busy with projects that initially started before. And then as soon as things kind of cleared out and people were getting back to work, new projects evolved. So I didn't have a huge slowdown from COVID. Thank goodness. I'm really grateful for that.
Yeah.
I would say that probably I'm most thankful for that because it was commercial versus residential, where I know all of that just kind of shut down completely. Although you probably have heard this from other designers that people were in their homes so much, they were going crazy.
Yeah, it was a big boom for residential. I had my firm at the time and we had a wait list. And I had to refer jobs out. That's why I was curious. Did you, for the COVID, even restaurants were reconstructing and designing their stuff?
Yeah, because restaurants were using their PPP money and saying, this is a time while we're shut down to do all of these renovations and changes that, you know, they're so scared to shut down for like any amount of time because they lose all their profit. So this was like an opening for them to be like, well, we might as well do this renovation that we've been wanting to do for years.
I love it. That's great. I'm so happy that you landed there. So what does it look like now post-COVID? I'm imagining it's exponential for you then.
Yeah, I think that people are constantly growing. And I happen to be in a city that is just like booming with growth right now. I think it's Kentucky in general. I think it's the bourbon industry. And it's like we have hotels popping up everywhere. And so that's wonderful for me, for other designers in my industry and locally here, that we constantly have new things coming and that leaves plenty for us.
Yeah, I love bourbon, by the way.
Oh, good.
When you said that, my eyes lit up.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm a little connoisseur. Okay, so you mentioned that you've been doing it for 5 years and it kind of organically morphed into being the hospitality. Tell us a little bit about that journey and how that happened.
Well, it's kind of funny. I have this tendency to not be afraid of any project, no matter how big or small. So I think that when things came up around me that I saw were coming, I would immediately reach out and say, hey, let me know if you need someone. I'm happy to do this. Even if I was unqualified and over my head, you know, all of those things. I think we all have these projects that we come upon that we're like, whoa, I've never done this before, but yes, I know ma'am. I can do it. So I think that's kind of what opened up those doors is that when I would meet people, I would offer to them services, especially at the very beginning. We did a lot of things for less money than what we would have done typically to kind of get in the door. Mm-hmm. But once we did this very large project that we got this amazing opportunity for, it all kind of flooded it from there because the exposure from this one place led to a lot of eyes on it and, you know, eventually led to more projects.
Sure. So after you did your first commercial hospitality, did you just say, hey, this is pretty sweet. I kind of prefer this to doing your traditional residential interior design, and that's where your marketing efforts were focused? Or what was the internal journey?
Yeah, absolutely. I became in love with commercial post that project. I mean, of course, there's difficulties with residential, just as there are with commercial, but I was enthralled with the idea that everybody could experience it. And with residential, it's those for very specifically for these people, you know, your clients who you've fallen in love with and you learn everything about them and you make their home special for them. This was like, how do I get in the brains of thousands of people and find a commonality amongst all of them to create a space that everybody wants to be in? And so that was so challenging and fun and exciting. And like I said, everyone has its own challenges because every client is different. Every space requires a different environment. But it was just over. I was always excited and enthralled by the concept of lots of eyes being on it and being in there.
Yeah, for sure. The exposure is definitely exponential. Since I'm going to use that word twice, that's $10, $5 a use. Okay, so here's a question for you that I'm thinking, and I don't want to besmirch residential clients, but they can be typically kind of high maintenance, right? There's a lot of hand-holding. There's a lot of revisions. If you don't have that worked in quite right, it's a lot. I'll just say that.
Yeah.
So with you and commercial, what I've heard, because I've never done commercial design personally. So what I've heard from designers is that commercial projects are just much less of a headache. It's more you have a CMO or a CEO or someone who's in charge of operations who just sign off on it and you do it. Mm-hmm. But you are a boutique, right? So all your stuff is more curated. So I was curious to see where on the Venn diagram between high maintenance residential and lower maintenance commercial does your style of commercial fall?
Oh, wow. Well, I think it's kind of all over the place still.
Okay.
In general, I would say, yes, it is less personal and requires a lot less handholding.
Okay.
Every client has been different and every company is a different size. So you could have 10 people that you have to answer to, which becomes extremely complicated and too many cooks in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. So that does, you know, and we always start out by saying, let's just have one contact that we you know, are designated to talk about this project in terms of making design decisions, because that just cleans it up a lot. Doesn't always work out that way, but that's our goal. But there are sometimes even commercial clients, they want these spaces, they get a little bit confused and they start putting in their own personal style and their own desires and things in these spaces, which sometimes works out wonderfully. And other times it's like, no, that's how you do your home. That's not necessarily how we should do your business. So you get a little bit of that as well. I think that what's funny about residential is that you could pick the most beautiful color of wall paint and someone could be like, that reminds me of the carpet I had when I was 6 years old and I hate it. And I'll so there's no sense to it. It's just a personal thing. So there's much less of that, I would say, in this boutique commercial where people aren't connecting these old memories of spaces they've lived in or seen to their workspace.
It sounds like a nice trade-off, right? You're still getting that creative outlet of making it very curated and specific, kind of like homey and residential, but still keeping that commercial perk of having less of the handholding. It sounds like a really nice middle ground, right?
Absolutely. I kind of get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I love it. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the logistics of doing this kind of boutique hospitality design. So for commercial design, that's a whole different animal than residential design. You have different codes, you have different expectations, different safety things to consider. How do you abide by those kinds of things for, you know, code enforcement and all that, and still make it as beautiful as you do with that curated home feel touch?
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes into play with accessories, because that's where we can get all that fun curation that's unique.
Sure.
Vintage pieces and whatnot. But in the main pieces, we do have to stick with things that we know that are wipeable, cleanable, that meet all the codes, you know, flame resistant, enough ADA, spatial regulations, all of those things. I really do rely on my collaborators on that. I look at the architects that are involved, the contractors that are involved, any of the trades and vendors, and we all really work together in terms of meeting those codes and regulations and still being able to keep this unique look. There's definitely challenges to that, but I kind of like that part of the puzzle. And it also simplifies things when it's like, no, we can't do that because that would go against this, this, and this. Yeah. So although that's much simpler with residential and I have to worry about those things, I think that obviously it makes perfect sense. And the safety of people in the space matters the most in terms of that or design.
What is the biggest pain point from that perspective? Is it something like, oh, we can't use this rug because your clients are going to trip and fall and you're going to get a lawsuit?
Yeah, it makes me so sad.
Yeah, I know, right? That was the first thing I thought of right there. So what other pain points are there that you're like, oh, I wish I could spec this, but we just can't. We have to.
I think fabrics, I did mention flame resistant stuff, like having less options there is always a little bit restrictive.
Sure.
And especially, I think clients are fearful of upholstery in general. And so trying to encourage that there's so many wonderful options out there that are stain resistant and easy to wipe off and will look good in a matter of 10 years, but also recognizing that, hey, your commercial space, you will have to update this and you will have to maintain this space differently than you would a home. And I think that's a lesson for a lot of these people, is that they just assume that whatever they get needs to last 100 years. And I don't know products that exist like that.
No, especially on the commercial side. So how do you set up those expectations with your clients who are looking at your beautiful work and they're expecting that, or they want this rug and, you know, and these things, how do you let them know your expertise in making it look completely curated, but also abiding by these things? And maybe some of their wishes and desires are going to have to be a little compromised there.
Yeah, there's definitely compromising for sure. I think that a lot of it is experience, being like, hey, look, these rugs, they're vintage, but they're not expensive vintage ones. They can look great even after they've been stepped on a million times. You just got to make sure that you maintain it with vacuuming in this. So we do have some little, little booklets that we give to our clients that help them take care of the things the way that they should. And depending on how they're staffed, that can be done very easily. You know, if they have plants, you know, how should we water them? How should we replace them when they're not looking so good anymore. So there's definitely a lot of education on that. And some people are just so well versed in it already because this is not their first rodeo.
Yeah.
And then other times this is the first business they've ever opened. So it takes a little bit more education in that part.
I was going through a rebrand in my company and having a new website built. And I brought in Wingnut at around the same time and had them do a strategy. In that strategy, I found it to be really comprehensive and actionable. I, like probably many designers, find Instagram to be such a bear. I understand that it is so, so important. It is a visual medium. What we do is so visual, but it's just, it's an entire full-time job, and with running a business and actually doing design, it was just really not feasible for me to keep up that pace with Instagram if I ever wanted to sleep. So working with Wingnut, they have taken all of that off of my plate, which honestly is the most invaluable piece of working with Wingnut.
So that's quite the value add, right? With you being able to walk them through that, especially if they've never done it before. So let's talk a little bit about your educational background. So did you go to interior design school? Do you have all of the bells and whistles for that?
Yeah, I did go to interior design school. I went to a place that's called IDI. So it's an institute that was part of a small college here. And that education was incredible in terms of like the foundation for a lot of it. And in design school, it is really geared toward commercial anyway. Yeah. So I think that was helpful for me kind of stepping into that direction. But also it was my first job getting out of school. I had an internship and my first job, I had to like stage furniture for sale and kind of set up all of these displays. And that's where I was like, man, I learned so much from this one job in terms of like spatially figuring out furniture and scales and getting the right combinations with colors and textures and whatnot. So school was incredible and I would never take it back, but I think it's been more on the job education that's taught me the most.
Which is really interesting to hear, right? So for commercial design, having a degree or having your certifications is clutch, right? On commercial, it's not like residential interior design where some states allow you to be a decorator without having your NCIDQ or the other certifications in there for sure. So that is a big differentiation between commercial and residential, unless there's a workaround I'm unaware of.
Yeah. So I think in Kentucky, you don't have to be licensed necessarily, but if you're not doing the permitted drawings, if the architect is allowing those and you're doing, ID sheets and stuff like that, there's definitely some wiggle room there. And other states are definitely more strict. I haven't worked in, Florida or New York. I've done other states, in the Midwest. And so I haven't explored the challenges with all of that yet, but.
There is a door there. If you are if you're a firm owner and maybe you have someone on staff who can fulfill those requirements given the state.
Absolutely.
That's kind of where I was going with that. So would you recommend, do you have any regrets about niching so specifically to this? And I know you do some residential. We did talk about that in the green room with e-design and stuff, but mostly this is your bread and butter, right?
Yes.
Okay. Correct. So if there's an interior designer out there who's thinking of it, but they're afraid of leaving money on the table or they're afraid of turning down business just to focus on doing hospitality or even as specific as you've gotten with boutique hospitality, are there any caveats or warnings, any regrets?
No regrets. I think that for me personally, everything excites me. I just love design so much and I love so many different styles of design. And I say this all the time. It's like if everyone's like, well, what is your specific style? And I'm like, it's really like all over the place because I think anything done well is beautiful. So in terms of like niching out, I still feel like despite doing boutique, I still have so many variety of projects and styles that I get to do. But I would say that you have to just jump all in and don't be afraid to try something different, do something different. And also for me, I take a lot of cues from other designers. I'm a huge avid person who continuously tries to educate myself and look at other people's work and study what other people have done. And I take all of those things and then you kind of convert it to your own thing. So I'm constantly learning, constantly trying, and watching what other designers are doing. And that's the best education in terms of that. So
I love that. I mean, your story also, backtracking a little bit, reminded me of my first gig with interior design that wasn't my house or my friends or family, but back in, I was like in my 20s. So yesterday was doing window displays for a job I had. And that was that to this day, that gives me, even just thinking about it, I'm lighting up. That was the best job I ever had. It paid nothing at the time, you know, back in the day, but I enjoyed that so much. And 8 hours would go by and I'd be like, oh, it's time to go. I love that. That you do learn a lot from doing that, for sure. That's terrific. So we do have that in common.
You know, in terms of like advice for other people, if you get into a project, for us, we've done a museum recently that we're still half finished with doing another part of that museum. Like, that's not my realm. I've never done a museum before.
That's
the same
cool.
concept of making a space feel hospitable and welcoming. That all fits with every commercial space we do. But it's okay to reach out to other experts in those fields, you know, whether it's a retail expert who does great retail design, you know, pull them in on those projects. Don't say no, because it doesn't fit into your particular niche.
Yeah, for sure. I love that. If there's ever an area that you are just kind of questioning, don't hesitate to bring in someone else and help them. That's part of that community of interior design. And that's why networking and the rising tide lifts all boats. And that's a thing, right?
Exactly.
And I love the spirit of that. So speaking of ongoing education and that kind of thing, what are some of the trends or emerging themes that you're seeing in boutique commercial design?
Man, it is kind of all over the place.
Is it?
But I love seeing mixtures of colors and patterns more and more. I love seeing more residential stuff and more commercials, whether that's like really amazing pattern tile or this crazy upholstery that you never would have seen in a commercial space before. I think that those are very inspiring and interesting. And I'm constantly thinking, well, how did they do that? How did they make that work in this space? But I think more and more, the overall trend is truly, and this is just so basic and generic, but we know now as a society that commercial spaces have to feel more like our homes. Like, we're just so much more educated on what we need as a society and as human beings to feel comfortable. And this is no longer the days of the white hospitals with the bright lights and the institutions of schools where everything was just so cold and sterile. Like, we just know better now. However, as far as we've come, I still think there's a lot of education on that part that people need to understand. You know, we want our restaurants and everything to look cool, but we're still sometimes fearful of taking those extra steps that make them a little bit more unique and a little bit more residential, so to speak. But I think that in general is just the most interesting trend, is just seeing it continuously move up that ladder.
So you're seeing some more biophilic designs, some more designs to make you and about that elicit feeling from the space. Okay. Are you seeing less contemporary, less modern, more traditional?
I see a lot more.
Maybe I'd in Kentucky.
Yeah, I would say there's quite some interesting trendy styles that we see, and you probably see this in your area as well, but there'll be, you know, Art Deco type restaurants and really interesting French, you know, wine shops, and kind of people are gathering into these little trends, I would say, that fit the theme of the restaurant. Mm-hmm. And I also think, and maybe I'm just partial to this because this is what we do a lot in our designs, but incorporating antiques and vintage pieces, and much less of this like all matched sets, and a little bit more of a variance of styles and eras and time periods.
What are you seeing that you, in your opinion, that you think is trendy, that's going to trend out quickly versus something that's more timeless?
Well, you know, and there's elements of this trend that are still cool, but like that boho chic, you know, hippie kind of look. I'm just kind of over that. I've been over it for a while.
Anthropology style.
I still see a lot of it. And I still see a lot of that Art Deco stuff, which has kind of become a little cliche. So trends are wonderful and great. And I think we incorporate them all a little bit in our own ways, but just not falling too far into it where it can become dated really quickly.
Speaking of, I live in a small town here in Southern Maryland, and my wife and I visited a new establishment, and it was very industrial.
Uh-huh.
That's done, right? Or no, is industrial still going strong? I mean, it is here.
It should be done. I don't know why it's not.
It should be, yeah.
And, you know, we do a lot of beverage spaces. So, you know, breweries is a great example. Like the most sterile industrial look. And so that's where one of our projects was so challenging, because we're like, we're going to make this feel still like a brewery, but different. And it attracted so many more female customers, I noticed. Like, they felt like, okay, this is not the same bro kind of beer and TV only.
I love it.
Corrugated metal.
Yep.
Beer hall tables.
Caged lights.
Yeah.
So what were the touches that you guys did to make it different that got a better demographic for them?
Well, in this particular project, we had a custom tile maker. I talk about this project all the time and her all the time. She did this design of this, you know, we wanted a Kentucky aspect, but I'm also very drawn to Middle Eastern kind of Mediterranean vibe. So we did this old tiled columns in the center. They already had columns in place. It was just like, let's do this custom pattern. And so she applied that. And that's the number one thing I think everybody notices as they walk in, is this colorful, beautiful custom tile that warmed the space up dramatically. And we did leather furniture and stuff, but we tied in more color and warmth with velvets and other tones.
So not necessarily feminine, but not just all, you know, testosterone and
yeah, exactly. We just played with some softer surfaces, things that felt, and to be honest, we don't design for any like gender in specific, but we all, despite where we come from or what, we all like nice things, and we all like to feel nice things. So whether you're the guy, you know, the guy's guy who likes the brewery pub kind of thing, he still wants to feel nice in a nice velvet sofa and be surrounded by beautiful colors and plants and things like that. There's no reason not to.
And also they like women, you know, 9 times out of 10, 8 times out of 10. So that's a bonus there for that little establishment. I love it. Amanda Jacobs, what else would you like to add for interior designers who are thinking of maybe niching into this chain that you think that they need to hear before we get into the fire round?
I think that it's a great opportunity for us to kind of take our expertise from residential and incorporate them into commercial spaces, because, and I mentioned this earlier, we're in spaces, you know, 90, I don't know what the percentage is, 98% of our lives we're indoors. Yep. You know, we have our cars and obviously we have outdoor experiences, but the indoors really matter and they affect our emotional needs. They meet our emotional needs. They provide some sort of comfort. So I think kind of recognizing the importance of that and being like, hey, I can take these skills that I have in this realm and easily, you know, transfer it to my friend's coffee shop or this beautiful bookstore or this winery that I love and they need help. Just to not be afraid of that and recognize there's so many commonalities between the commercial and the residential, you know, design world.
I love it. And I love that you're making commercial spaces less sterile, not sterile at all, I should say, and that it has interest and that there is quite the demand for that. And again, guys, you need to go check out Amanda Jacobs' work over there. So I will ask you to share all of that after this. Amanda Jacobs, are you ready for the What Up Wingnut round?
Oh, never ready. Yeah, let's do it. Okay.
What would the hashtag on your tombstone be?
I thought about this a lot, but I think it's kind of sounds cheesy, but search for soul in everything.
Okay. You're stuck on a deserted island, but you can have your one favorite food forever. What is it?
It's so hard for me to pick this because I just love food in general, but I'm a huge Greek food fan. So any sort of Greek food I could not live without, or I could live with forever, I should say.
Can we be more specific? Is there a specific dish or?
Yeah, probably just the traditional gyro, to be honest.
I'm down. Yeah. I'm there. I would be on that island. I would come to dinner with you on that island for sure. Last but not least, please recommend a book that's impacted you either personally or professionally.
I've, you know, recently I haven't read a lot of great, like, motivational. I read sometimes some funny mysteries and other things, but one book, and this is going to sound probably a little crazy, but I do read a lot of books about saints, and there's a one about Saint Nectarios, who's a very popular on the same Greek trend. He's a popular Greek saint, but his story was motivational because of things, all of these trials and tribulations that he faced. And he kind of, despite what other people thought about him or what other false accusations he got, he kind of endured all of that with such grace and humility and wasn't always trying to like prove other people wrong. He just kind of accepted it. And I think that's such a good lesson for us to kind of recognize that, you know, we know who we are. The people who love us and know us know who we are, that all of these outside opinions, you just can't let those take you down. You know, you got to withstand it and move on.
I love that. What was the title?
It's Saint Nectario's Saint of the Century. And they just did a movie about him too, which is really cool. Oh. So I watched that.
Very cool. You can get the book, look at the movie, and there you go. Watch the movie. I should say, look at. Look at me. I'm 5 years old. All right, guys. If you're not subscribed to us or on YouTube, Designed by Wingnut Social, we're going to show up some of Amanda Jacobs' beautiful design there. But you can also go where, Amanda, to learn more about you?
You can see us on Instagram. We're getting better at that. I really need your help, to be honest. But
let's talk. Let's talk.
We should. So on Instagram, Amanda Jacobs Design Inc. And our website, www.amandajacobs.com. And hopefully we'll start adding some of our new exciting projects on there for you guys to see.
All right. That is amazing. Amazing work. Go check it out, guys. Go check out Amanda Jacobs on Instagram. That's Amanda Jacobs Design Inc. Verified, by the way. And or go head on over to our YouTube channel, Designed by Wingnut Social, or go to wingnutsocial.com, and all of this will be in the show notes for this episode. Amanda Jacobs, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Darla. I appreciate it.
There you go. Have you been kicking around niching into boutique commercial design? You heard it. You heard it straight from Amanda herself. No regrets with niching down, right? No money left on the table there. It's always, I cannot recall one single designer that I've spoken to in the span of my interior design career that has regretted niching down. And all have said it was incredibly frightening at first, except Amanda. I think she didn't seem very scared. But that it worked out just like gangbusters in the end, just to niche down. And I hope that Amanda gave you some takeaways there. If you've been kicking around, maybe specializing in this, on some avenues to take or some details to look at if you're looking to shape your firm into a more laser-focused boutique commercial interior design firm. All right, guys, remember, if you need help with marketing your interior design firm, if you're an architect or if you're a manufacturer or maker to the trade vendor, wingnutsocial.com. Social media marketing, SEO, paid ads. We are a full-service social media and digital marketing agency. The one thing that we don't do is website design, but I got a hookup for you there, too. A terrific, terrific website designer. Anyhow, wingnutsocial.com. That's it for today, folks. Remember, until next time, to get out there, get uncomfortable, and you know what? Be great.
You've reached the end of this episode of Designed by Wingnut Social, but that's only the first step into accelerating your business the Wingnut way. Head over to wingnutsocial.com or call us at 786-206-4331 to see how we can help take your business from meh to amazing. We'll see you on the next episode of Designed by Wingnut Social, your digital marketing tightly fastened.
On today's show, guest Amanda Jacobs walks us through her experience with a very niched interior design firm. Niched to what, you ask? Well, I'm glad you asked. On today's show, our guest, Amanda Jacobs of AmandaJacobsDesign.com, talks us
about.
On today's show, guest Amanda Jacobs. Hey, kids, and welcome to I'm Gonna Burp, the podcast about burps, the styles of burps, and how we love them. And we discuss COVID, what that looked like for another guest, again, Amanda Jacobs, saying that And I hope that you have some takeaways here, some thoughts to fuel those mental fires, those gray matter fires on maybe, you know, going to the moon.
Good boy, Mango.